Welcome everyone back to the Brocast. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 24/7 Sports Network, and I am joined on this fine Thursday morning, by Tracy Pearson. Tracy, how are you?
I'm good, Dave. You know, that rain was kind of, you know, we're Southern California guys. We can't take rain for that long.
But it was nice to have a little.
Yeah, a day would be good.
Not many days.
That
was a lot of days. I read that we had, at one point, we had 13 inches of rain at one point in the water cycle, where last year we had 0.16 inches of rain at that point. That's very cool.
Yeah.
It also overlapped with UCLA's first transfer portal official visit weekend.
It's raining transfer commitments, Dave.
It's a rain in transfers. UCLA began the transfer portal on, what was that, Thursday night last week? So we've been in it for about a week.
The second
Tracy, me, and Brandon, we have all gone floridly insane in the last 6.5 days. I can only imagine how coaching staffs around the country have felt, but feel like we're barely holding on to our sanity as we try to stay on top of.
Can you imagine, seriously, what's okay? If you're just a regular program that's been there for a while and you're bringing in some transfers, UCLA's got to replace dozens of guys. They're tripping in. Mm-hmm. They're probably at 35 official visits.
Well, and they're still
since like, last Saturday.
As late as the end of last week, they were still evaluating current roster guys to try to figure out who's going to fit and, you know, have those conversations and all that kind of stuff. Like, just in real time dealing with all of that, I cannot imagine, because they're probably going to have to take how many bodies are we still thinking? Like, right now, they already have commitments from, I think it's 15 transfers.
15.
It's going to at least
by the time we publish this, it could be more.
Yeah, it's going to at least double. And you know, there's no telling what taking a transfer means for guy who's remaining, who might decide he's suddenly going to enter the portal. Like, it's wild times, crazy times. But
so evaluations, right? Reach out, contact player, agent, family, official visit, arrange for who's coming, hotels, the dinners, the whole, I mean, oh my Lord.
Yeah.
I mean, I've never seen, so you saw the pictures that someone shared from this week's official visits when they went out to dinner at Boa Steakhouse, which is kind of one of the go-tos for the athletic department. They had a bus for midweek visitors.
Yep.
A big bus for midweek. Never seen that before. That's a first, a bus like that.
Yeah.
So yeah, just all that it entails for this whole endeavor. I mean, there isn't a lot of sleep, or there's sleep being done at the Wasserman Center. There's probably some cots and things.
I would imagine,
like,
there
Derek
are.
Ray. I mean, the guy's got to be like juiced on coffee all day.
I don't think Derek Ray has slept in about 3.5 weeks.
Yeah.
No, they're doing, I mean, they're doing incredible work.
General manager.
Yeah. The general manager for UCLA and that whole new front office, having to get familiar with the school while also putting together this class. It was always crazy. Like, you remember back when Jim Mora took over in that first offseason trying to, like, you know, finalize the high school class. And that was always kind of crazy for a new staff to have to do and try to sell all these guys on a school that they're only familiar with for a few weeks. This is an entirely different world, because you're taking so many guys and you're trying to fill out an entire roster with basically open free agency for everybody. You're trying to retain your guys that you really, really want. And you're having to have these, like, nuanced conversations, whereas, hey, we're going to maybe retain this guy. What do you think about that? Like, this is.
Yeah. Those big recruiting weekends under Chip Kelly, you know, that was just so massive. And so actually, if you remember the Boa thing reminded me. So remember, Coach Kelly would only have dinners for official visitors on campus. Didn't want to go off campus. First, they went to Rocco's to go out for a beer one time, which was revolutionary. And they actually went to Catch for dinner for one guy. You know who that was, if you remember?
Who?
Puka Nacua.
That worked out.
It did not work out. But it was such a big thing to convince him to drive in to West Hollywood to have dinner at one restaurant with one guy while this staff so far is filling a bus.
Can you imagine just sitting down and having dinner with Chip Kelly? You're like 18 years old and it's just a one-on-one dinner and that's your recruiting visit. I think that would honestly be weirder than the training table.
So, Coach, you like Coronas.
So anyway, I mean, it's been a really crazy 6 days here. UCLA, as we just said, pulled in 15 commitments already. I think the best way to approach this actually now, because we have a better idea of when we were talking last week around this time, we had a pretty good idea of what the needs were. Now we're seeing how they're filling a lot of them. And what I want to do is actually go by position with the entire team, because they've now kind of hit on some needs with everything. I mean, there's even a quarterback now on our transfer portal tracker. So what I want to do is go through these position by position and kind of just assess how they're filling their gaps, what we still think they need with each of these position groups. How does that sound, Tracy?
Oh, I am so happy about that, Dave. You've made me an ecstatic human.
Tremendous. I'm so excited. All right, so I'm going to use our depth chart as a guide. We're going to start with quarterback, though, instead of offensive line, because offensive line is a longer conversation. But quarterback, as of now, we know that UCLA is recruiting one quarterback. And what makes sense as a fit here is that you need a experienced backup. That is the number one thing UCLA needs. And what we've heard is that they are hosting Cal Poly quarterback Ty Dieffenbach on a visit that I believe begins today. He started at Cal Poly this year. He was at Pitt for 2 years. Didn't find the field, but then started at Cal Poly. Started the entire year. I mean, he didn't wow anybody, didn't blow anybody away, but has that coveted thing that literally no one else in the depth chart besides Nico has, which is actual college playing time experience.
But Dave, I mean, if they're looking for just a guy for depth in emergency, you know, in emergency break glass for this quarterback, Nick Billups, your favorite guy, would...
Is he still kicking around somewhere? Where is he?
No, he's got to run out. He has to have run out. Dave, what is your first thing that always comes to mind for you about Nick Billups?
My favorite moment of the Nick Billups era is that he's never played a snap. Played a snap of college football.
Dave is never able to talk about this guy without saying that.
They kept talking about him as, oh, he's a really capable backup. What? He's never played. He's never played a snap. And he's been in college for like 9 years.
Wait, did he play a snap at UCLA? Why do I think he
never
did?
Played a snap?
Are you
ever,
sure?
I'm ever. Okay. He never got in the game.
You got to give the guy, I mean, give the kid some credit, man. He came there just to be a backup.
I'm not giving him credit. He's never played a snap of football, though.
He never played a snap.
True freshman at Utah 2020, did not see game action. Spent three seasons at BYU 2021 to 2023, did not see game action. 2024 at UCLA, did not see game action.
Yes. Okay. So, yes, Ty Dieffenbach.
Yes. Local kid, Tracy.
Local kid. He's a junior. He will be a junior, right? He has 2 years of eligibility.
Yeah, he's got 2 years left.
He'd be coming into a depth chart that, I mean, you'd have to think number two guy is going to be Madden Iamaliava, right?
Yeah. The thing is, with Dieffenbach, you're getting a little bit more experience. So it's like, you know, what do you prioritize if Nico goes down for a couple of snaps? What do you prioritize if Nico goes down for a couple of games?
Right. So I believe they'd still go with Madden off the bench. He's QB2, but what this guy could probably feel, he's at Cal Poly. I can go to UCLA. Nico is going to be gone in a year. I can compete for the starting job as a senior, or at least maybe get, you know, if you're a college quarterback and you're QB2, it is very likely you're going to play. So the prospect of playing at UCLA or in obscurity probably would be attractive and to be close to home. So, I mean, I think it's a good thing.
Yeah. I think this is totally fine and we don't need to belabor this one too much. I think the need here is a backup, and Dieffenbach would fill that need. we're not talking about somebody to compete to start. It's somebody to come in and play. And, you know, if, you know, he was once a P4 prospect, he did go to Pitt. So as far as these things go, I think it's a totally fine target. And if they land him, that's great.
More important and more involved, that offensive line, Dave.
Let's go, baby. All right. So let's, I'll set the table of who they have commitments from at this point. It's JD Rayner, who was the true freshman at JMU last year. He redshirted. He has 4 years of eligibility left. We have him projected at guard. He could play tackle. Essentially, what he is a high potential upside because he was playing tight end for most of his high school career until the last couple seasons. Ended up at right tackle. If you watch his film, he moves really well. Partly that's because he's undersized. I mean, he was probably 260 in high school. He's 280 now. We'll see how he moves in April, but I like this one. No reason not to take him, but projecting him to start, probably not. Then there are two other guys who we would project to start at this point. One is Riley Robel, who's another JMU guy. He started for JMU this year at guard, 6'3", 291. He has 2 years of eligibility left. And then the other one is Boise State tackle Hall Schmidt, who was hurt this past season, but did start 12 games for the playoff-bound Broncos in 2024. Both of those guys we would project to start somewhere on this offensive line. There's still a lot of holes to fill, Tracy.
Yeah. Just speaking about these three guys, when you talk about Rayner, I'm still of the opinion overstock on offensive linemen, and particularly – obviously guys who can play immediately, but particularly younger guys, because it is the most random, imprecise evaluation of any position, I'd say, in probably football or basketball, maybe basketball post players.
And a huge part of that reason is because their bodies change so much from they're in high school to when they're in like mid-college.
We've seen tight ends come in at UCLA at 225 pounds who ended up NFL left tackles. So, I mean, I would stop if you see a flash of a guy who's got some feet, and he's a freshman, sophomore, I would take them all. And just see which ones develop and who you might get. John Gaines. I saw John Gaines play in the NFL last weekend. I mean, there's so many guys that went way beyond their stars or their evaluations as high schoolers, just because of what Dave said, of physically developed. So take as many of those guys as you can get. Robel, I think he's coming because obviously he's a good fit with the coaching staff, the offensive line coach. But I think he's feeling I've got the right guard spot probably lined up. The starting guard spot.
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, what we were thinking, or what I was thinking partially originally, is his size maybe makes more sense at center. But I don't really know the thinking at this point on Samuen. I mean, let me just, as an aside, it is absolutely insane that they did not fix Samuen's snaps this year. And
really insane.
I
don't blame him.
You don't really blame him because it was, look, I'm not a offensive line technique understander. Like, okay, I've never coached offensive line, but I do know geometry, and what they had him doing, or what he was doing and was not being corrected, was being directly over the ball when he was trying to snap it. You have no leverage on the ball if you're doing that. You're not getting any wind up on the ball if you're doing that. It is not going to come out powerfully if you're doing that. And I don't know, maybe he has unusually short arms. I don't think that's the case. I think he was just not lining up appropriately over the ball. And could he have self-corrected? Maybe. But also, how is nobody in that offensive line staff saying, hey, that's the problem with your snaps, or even identifying that there was a problem with the snaps?
Well, they might have identified it, Dave. I mean, they're coaches. They probably went, this is wrong. They tried to fix it, but they didn't go to the extent of getting it fixed. It very simply screwed up the timing and the rhythm of almost every pass play.
It was geometry. It was all it was. You need an angle of release. Anyway.
So I think he's, I still think he's going to, Samuen's still there. Samuen's an impressive young man. I bet he might've met with the staff. They looked at some tape of him and think we can work with this guy. So they're probably keeping him. I mean, we've heard a lot of rumors about some guys who are going in the portal. Dave, have you heard anything about Sam Yoon?
No, nothing on Sam. Yeah. So that's why I'm saying Robel, that was my initial thought. But at this point, I'm thinking guard.
And it could still happen. I mean, we've been surprised. So I think, and you got Eugene Brooks on left guard, which was a huge guy to keep.
Yes.
And let's just say this too. That's not easy.
No.
Eugene Brooks was their best offensive lineman. He was a redshirt freshman last year. I mean, he was their best lineman, and he's got 3 years of upside. He's a potential pro. You come in with a whole new staff and say, hey, could you stay here? You've got to do some recruiting and some NIL to get that to happen. That's huge amount of credit. I mean, if we went through, and I think we did, the old depth chart and said, what are the top five guys that you'd want? He'd top three.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Yeah. So those are probably, I mean, of course, way premature here. The two probably starting guards, I would say. Hall Schmidt, really kind of intriguing. I did watch some of him and I kind of like him. He's huge.
Yeah.
He's a big guy. Moves pretty well for his size. He, to me, is a right tackle. Now, Dave and I started to talk before we turned on the recorder here. And then Dave said, why are we doing this? This is really good stuff. Let's turn it on. And one of the things was, I think it's good we do this before we even start talking about more of the transfer targets at offensive line. Schmidt might be projected as a left tackle. We haven't heard that he isn't. We haven't heard that he is. And that would be because of, like Dave was saying off, what is it? Off mic? Off tape?
Off air.
Off air. That they might be doing, there's some indications here they might be doing something different with the off, or there's something very deliberate that they're doing with this offense and offensive line.
Yeah, well, what you can see, I mean, look, we're only 15, again, we're 15 commitments into this thing. So we're trying to read tea leaves based on partial information, but, and we'll get to another position group that kind of indicates some of this too, which is running back, but it does seem like they are gearing up for what potentially could be a run heavy offense, which look, that's what they ran at JMU. So it would make sense from that perspective too. But if you take a guy like Hall Schmidt, who both Tracy and I think is more of a right tackle, and say he is projected to play left tackle, that indicates to me that you're looking to be more of a ground and pound type team. You know, a lot of guard types and right tackle types, that always indicates that to me. You know, you're not thinking you need the super agile, long-armed, traditional pass protector left tackle. And maybe they do still want to do that. So, you know, there's that caveat. But given the number of running backs they're taking and then giving kind of the types of offensive linemen they're looking at, it makes me wonder that they're just trying to essentially recreate a lot of what they had with that JMU offense in terms of its style of play.
Yeah. I think we should, and this is obviously fluid because we're in the middle of the transfer portal window, but if we look at the guys that are left on UCLA's depth chart at offensive line, it indicates they've already taken three offensive line transfers, at least two, if not three more, that they're going to have to take. Just obviously, we'd both like to see them secure a really elite left tackle, but even beyond that, at least two more guys. Just in terms of playable depth, you need, going into a season, you need seven playable guys, you know, with injury, eight even.
Yep.
But at least seven. And if we just take the guys that are still on this depth chart, that's hard to see.
Yep.
You know, like Jalen Jeffers was a playable depth guy, didn't play all last year because of injury. We know he's pushing for a 6-year. We have not heard anything about him. That might be their best shot. There are a bunch of younger guys, and we have no idea if they're going to be any good. We saw Jensen Somerville, who had to step in at left tackle a bit this year, and that was an adventure. Maybe he'll get better. He was obviously, he was just a redshirt freshman, but there aren't too many other guys. Left, you know, there's Garrison Blank, you know, there are young guys who have some upside, but are completely unproven. So they need at least three more offensive linemen, and they're recruiting like that too.
Yeah. I mean, looking at it, and there's still guys that, you know, kind of waiting to see on. I knew Packy Finau is one of the remaining big names. We haven't heard
well,
much.
Well, first we had heard Osman is supposed to be a
correct
the Harvard.
Yeah, that guy should end up, I mean, at least according to our last information, probably going to end up at UCLA. But Packy Finau, who is one of the remaining kind of higher profile targets, haven't heard much new on him since the initial kind of UCLA is probably makes sense as a contender here. And then there's a variety of other guys, but one that I'm interested in is Carter Swayze, who's the other JMU offensive guard.
Who officially visited.
Who did officially visit. He's a little squatter. He's like 6'1" and bigger, like well over 300. No word yet on whether he's, you know, seriously considering it or whether he's going to go back to JMU.
I was told generally that the JMU potential transfers, they're in a couple of buckets. They're the guys that UCLA will take who look like clear starters at UCLA. Then there are the guys who were younger who they'd bring in, like Rainer, who could develop. All good. Then there are the guys that kind of fall in another kind of curious bucket, like Swayze, who were former starters who might not see a clear path to a starting spot at UCLA, especially if there's Rebel and there's Eugene Brooks. So he'd have to think, and I understand, I mean, he's trying to go play somewhere and make some money. You don't necessarily want to go to UCLA and be a backup guard. So I'm not just saying that specifically about him. I'm saying that's what I was told generally, like to think in terms of the JMU guys. Are they starting? Are they younger guys who develop, or are they former starters that don't perceive there's a starting spot for them?
Yeah. And that'll be interesting. And that's kind of where the thinking again goes back to Sam Yoon and, you know, whether it, because there are three interior spots on an offensive line. One requires snapping. And you know, if you brought in a guy like Swayze, that would potentially move a guy like Robel to center, but it only makes sense if you're, you know, as Tracy said, it only makes sense if you've got a starting spot for Swayze, because otherwise why would he come? And that only would happen if Sam Yoon was moving on as well. So anyway, if you're looking at the depth chart, what UCLA really needs at this point, it's a starting left tackle, as Tracy pointed out, and then it's depth. They need those six, seven guys to steal.
Oh no, it actually made it into our
podcast. Those 6'7" guys. So anyway, offensive line still kind of a need at this point. And left tackle still, again, kind of depends on what sort of offense they're running, but still they need a starting level tackle. Let's just say that. And if it's going to be a traditional offense that's going to pass the ball quite a bit, a left tackle for sure.
One guy I was intrigued with that we just heard about yesterday is the transfer from Stephen F. Austin. Chimdia Nayawu. Interesting guy. Was not a prospect out of high school. He's the younger brother of I can't remember his brother's first name, but he's a big time guy at Oklahoma, I think. Started 14 games for Stephen F. Austin at right tackle. But he's gotten offers from Northwestern, West Virginia, Oklahoma. I mean, a lot of P4s. If you're getting offers from P4s, that means, you know, generally you can assume they can play at this level. He visited Tucson this week. We'll see if UCLA can get him in for an official visit. Be looking for that one, because I found a little bit of tape on him, very little tape, but I like the way he moved and his size. And also we've heard, and we can't talk about them yet, there might be some other tackles out there, some transfer tackles that UCLA is involved with. Let's just put it that way. There might be.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to running back. UCLA has taken two transfers at this point. Wayne Knight, the star running back for JMU last year. And then Dylan Lee, who was at Iowa State, was backup running back there. And he has still a couple of years of eligibility. He is a redshirt sophomore. So he has 3 years left. Wayne Knight is a redshirt senior. He will have just the 1 year left. We haven't heard anything to indicate that Anthony Woods and Javian Thomas are moving on. So there's just looking at it right now, Tracy, this is a quite robust depth chart.
That's a good way of putting it. I don't want to use the word loaded because then people, but robust. This is a good, if this holds up, let's just say Anthony Woods, Wayne Knight, Jet Thomas, Dylan Lee, Carson Cox. That's a pretty good, that's got some, I mean, that's like, that's a, you can go to war with that depth chart running back.
Yeah. Well, and the freshman they took, Jaden Fox, I think we both kind of liked.
Liked, very fast dude.
Yes. So if this maintains the way we think it does, I think they might still take a couple guys or one guy at least, but I think they're kind of set here. I don't think you need to.
Yeah.
The other guy that they are still targeting. So as we reported this morning, Roderick Robinson, from what we understand, is not going to take his official visit to UCLA. And that one seems like it's going to, once again, Roderick Robinson and UCLA, two ships passing in the night.
It's going to happen. It's going to probably happen in another 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. But, the other guy who's still, potential is Southern Utah running back, Joshua Dye. He, was at UTEP originally, then he went to Southern Utah where he was, kind of incredible this past year, was an FCS All-American. Had 28 touchdowns and over 1,800 yards rushing. That's production, baby.
Yeah, I watched him. He's a straight-ahead kind of guy, 5'11", 200 pounds. It's technically really good. Knows when to hit a hole, has patience. And then when he hits a hole, is very explosive straight-ahead. Not a lot of shake back and forth, but he gets into the second level. Usually he's gone. That's what he is. And very, very sturdy. Doesn't go down too easily. So, you know, that kind of guy is, if you're running the ball and that's what you've decided and you can hand this guy the ball and he's going to make 5.5 yards a carry, that's the way to go.
Yeah. He's, I mean, the thing is from like a need standpoint, I don't know if running backs are need, but you know, if you want to take him, take him.
Really interesting, like what we just said with the depth chart. If you add him,
yeah,
I'd have to think. Well, we're going to speculate. I'd have to think someone goes in the portal if he's added, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, so right now, I mean, I'm kind of guesstimating because I put in Wayne Knight yesterday as the number two guy behind Anthony Woods, but like, I have no idea how this will shake out. Like, this doesn't because Carson Cox. Was a much ballyhooed prospect at high school. He's only a redshirt freshman. He basically has redshirted a season, and the few minutes we saw of him this season looked pretty good. Ran pretty hard.
Yeah, yeah.
I've got him fifth right now on this depth chart. There's no real way of knowing at this point how this is going to shake out. And adding another body to it is making my head hurt. So I
think in terms of next year, though. They know they have Wayne Knight. He's actually signed. They probably retain at least one of Jet Thomas or Anthony Woods, if not both. And then, you know, you hold on to Carson Cox. You got a little bit depth, you know, to go four deep in case of injury. You're good to go.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that I'm not worried about that.
No, running back seems fine. And, yeah. And also another reason that you might take more guys this cycle is that all of Woods, Knight, and Thomas are going to be done with their eligibility after this.
Yeah. So Dylan Lee might be seeing, hey, after all three of those guys, if they're there, if all three of those guys leave, I've got two more years.
Yeah. And Carson Cox could also think, well, okay, I'll be starting my, you know, final 3 years in school.
Yeah.
You know? So, okay.
Wide receiver, Dave. Really? Woo-hoo! That was wide receiver day yesterday.
Yeah, this depth chart has
four of them
changed significantly from last season. But UCLA brought in yesterday. Let's start with the headliner, Aiden Mizell, the speedster from Florida, who's a four-star in the transfer portal. Not actually my favorite guy they brought in yesterday. My favorite guy they brought in yesterday is somebody I've been banging the drum for since I watched him at JMU, Landon Ellis, who's I want to say borderline a Jordan Payton clone, as kind of an outside physical receiver, who's, you know, got a decent little burst to him, but is really strong hands. They brought in him. They also brought in Leland Smith, who was one of the like trio of San Jose State, right? Receivers, bigger guy, 6'4", 215. And then they also brought in Samaj Morgan, who was at Michigan, 5'10", 175, much more of a slot. But that's four guys replacing, you know, that group that included Quasi Gilmore, Rico Flores, and then Carter Shaw also entered the portal yesterday. Right now, Tracy, that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 new guys in this depth chart, including the true freshman. And the only guy who played any time last year who's returning is, at this point, Mikey Matthews.
Yeah. If you're talking about trying to fill every receiver need and in recruiting, I mean, that's a tough thing to do. And honestly, they did it all in one day. I mean, Aiden Mizell, go watch him. He might not be that Jordan Payton kind of every down, throw the ball 11 yards, but he can get downfield. He has top end speed to go over the top. He yards after the catch. He's good. Then you've got your possession receiver in Landon Ellis, who Dave likes. I'm really impressed with Leland Smith. If you're looking now, you're getting that 6'4", 215 pounder who's going to do jump balls in the end zone and a very good possession guy. And then you top it off with Samaj Morgan, who's that little kind of sneaky guy who gets into seams and can advance the ball from there pretty well with some good speed. I mean, that's kind of hitting on all cylinders in wide receiver recruiting in one day.
And they're maybe not done.
Yes.
So there's still Donovan Foppel, who's the New Mexico State wide receiver, who was also very productive last year, 61 catches for 661 yards. He's 6'1", 195. And then there's also Yale receiver Nico Brown, who like basically set a bunch of records in the Ivy League. 71 catches for 1,085 yards and 11 touchdowns. He visited, I want to say Tuesday. It's so hard to remember what day it is. But I mean, there's those two. I think Nashawn Montgomery is coming on campus. I think he's starting today. He's a Florida wide receiver. He's sort of a more of a depth guy probably because he redshirted this past season, but he was, you know, a fairly well-regarded prospect out of high school.
About 4 years of eligibility. So he's one of those guys to fill in the depth and future and, you know, future talent to emerge.
Yeah. So there's still some irons in the fire here. I would expect them actually to probably take another guy at this point.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah.
So they're going to be changing this wide receiver room as it stands right now. I feel pretty good about it.
Yeah, I do too.
I think if add another body who can be a rotational guy. So you're not counting on true freshmen to play. Yeah, call it down.
And again, I mean, I want to emphasize, we're 6 days in. You know, UCLA has NIL, and it's been said, and it's not us just saying it, you know, that's a decent amount, let's say. It's not a typical program where you're going out in the portal just to find 10 to 12. I mean, Bob Chesney needs to find like 80 playable guys. Yep. You know, guys who are going to come in, be the right type of guy, have good character, good citizens, build the culture, which is what, you know, Coach Chesney needs to do to begin with, in my opinion. And for us to say in day six, and maybe we're getting ahead of ourselves, but that the wide receiver room and the running back room is looking really good. Wow, man, that's really impressive. I mean, yeah. I can't emphasize how impressive that is. We will get into where we think the recruiting effort still, you know, has some needs, but we got to give credit to where credit's due. And that's pretty phenomenal to say that just 6 days in.
Yeah,
when you're filling 80 slots,
and they didn't do it by just bringing over a bunch of JMU guys. They brought over one, but I mean, Landon Aiden Mizell, that's a coup, because I mean, he was, he wasn't necessarily a starter, but he was a 4-star in the portal who was getting a lot of interest.
Yeah, we need to find out about that recruitment. Like, yeah. Who was responsible? Was there a connection? Because that is a coup.
Yeah.
That might be, well, keep going. I think that might be their, in this class, is that
best
their
pickup so far? Yeah.
Yeah. And just in terms of ranking, I think that might be the 4-star ranking.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Tight end. Right now they have one commitment from Josh Pfeiffer, who was the second starter-ish for JMU this year, much more of the blocking type tight end, with Lakota Dupree being the more receiving type. Dupree ended up at Florida, I believe. But Josh Pfeiffer committed. He has 2 years of eligibility left, 6'5", 260, definitely much more of a blocker. They're still recruiting tight end, Stevie Amar, whatever you want to go with. He's the Boston College tight end, 6'2", 228, more of a receiver type, sort of Ryan Moya sized, if you want a little callback. He only spent a year at BC. He's a redshirt freshman. He has 4 years of eligibility left. Take him, and he's probably not your starter or close to it this year. I think they've got to count on Noah Flores or Dylan Sims probably stepping up and into something akin to like a starting and receiving role. Stevie would be somebody you take and probably put in the depth chart and hopefully have him develop into somebody down the road.
The guy they missed on was Dorian Thomas, yes. The tight end from New Mexico. You know, this is the way it goes in recruiting. It looked like he was going to commit to UCLA. Had kind of indicated that, and then Cal at the last minute swooped in.
I heard what they did was they actually said to him, hey, Dorian, we know you got a good offer from UCLA, but guess what, we have just $10 million extra dollars that we have coming in that we can just give to you directly.
Have you heard of Calamony, Dorian?
We'd love to give it to you.
Yeah,
I'm just trying to make the bros psychotic with that.
Yeah, no, but that's valid psychosis, because that's insane at this point. Here's the thing. If we go by, I looked this up a while back. I think James Madison's tight end, I think Dupree only had like 20 receptions last year, or 18, something like that. Hudson Habermill had, that's about the same of what Hudson Habermill did this year. I think he had 18 to 20. While we still envision that tight end role from a few years ago, you know, being really prominent in the offense, and I'm sure these offensive coaches would want it too, it doesn't play that big of a role. They got Josh Pfeiffer as the blocking tight end. They could go out and find another guy, but if they keep Noah Fox Flores and Dylan Sims, I'm kind of okay wanting those guys to maybe potentially develop for a pass catching role that isn't necessarily that important, and the NIL could go someplace else.
Yeah. Agreed.
Dorian Thomas, let's just say it. He went for more money, no fault of his. I kind of respect UCLA didn't go, okay, well, you know, here's so much more. They just said, okay, well, bye.
Yeah.
And respect it.
All right.
That was a good decision. Let's put it that way.
So that is the offense. I would say as a general overarching thing, I think they're doing pretty well. I'd still want, as we said, I think the big need at this point is still a couple more offensive linemen and potentially particularly a tackle. But overall, I'd say offensive recruiting is going pretty well.
Yeah. Even if they are gearing that offensive line to be run first.
Still need a tackle.
I still want that left tackle.
Yeah. Still need a tackle. All right. Defensive recruiting, and we'll start with the defensive line. If you're just looking at the depth chart projected for next year, what you're seeing is there is a empty and gaping hole at defensive tackle. You've got Tyler Partlow and Robert James III, I think both of whom were injured all of the year. Marcus Almada, who's a true freshman, and Ashton Sanders, who really just didn't play a whole lot in a backup role. None of those guys, for me, project to start this year. So they're still in desperate need of two starting-level defensive tackles and, in my opinion, at least one and maybe two more rotational defensive tackles.
I think it'd be surprising if those three guys even, if they made it in the rotation, we'd say, wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, there's a lot that still needs to be done here. And look, to UCLA's credit, they've got a lot of irons in the fire. Some of the names we've heard at this point, one of the big ones is Utah defensive tackle Dallas Vakalahi. He played in 17 games the last 2 years, had some injuries, started three games as a true freshman for Utah in 2024. So that should tell you a little bit of what his upside is, because that's a Kyle Whittingham team, again, starting a true freshman at defensive tackle. Generally speaking, if a guy is coming out of a Kyle Whittingham Utah program at defensive line and wants to play for you, and he played for Kyle Whittingham, you take him because he's probably pretty good. So this is one where he visited the first weekend. We haven't yet heard what's exactly going on there and whether he is going to end up at UCLA. There's no guarantees in this crazy world, but that's one of the guys they're going after. Another one, Dartmouth defensive tackle Dakota Quinonez. He has one season left. He was productive at Dartmouth this past season. And then there's Jeremiah Warren, an Illinois defensive tackle. There's Rutgers defensive lineman Daryl Dinyohi-ish.
I left that one up for you.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Yep. He also has, I would say, a decent chance of coming because he was actually at James Madison way back in 2024 and then transferred to Rutgers. He played in four games, missed the rest of the season due to injury. Rotational DT, but he might make sense to reconnect with this staff. There's Saddleback College defensive lineman Gavin Blum, who was, again, very productive this past season at Saddleback. 35 tackles, 5.5 sacks, 10 tackles for loss. A lot of guys where, frankly, I haven't seen Blum play. I haven't seen Dakota Quinonez play. I've seen Vakalahi, and sign me up for that. I didn't see a whole lot of Jeremiah Warren, the Illinois DL, because he really didn't play a whole lot at Illinois. But they've got irons in the fire, and if they want to take four of these guys and they think they can play, the thing is, I see for sure one starter here, Tracy, in Vakalahi, and I guess if you're taking Quinonez, you're thinking he's the starter too. But I'm not sure I see, and this is where like it comes into projection of guys I haven't seen. I don't know where the other starter is if it's in this group.
Yeah. So this is probably might be the most challenging, I think, among on the depth chart to fill adequately at this point. We have to say Ciali, which last name are we going by?
I'm going with Tapaki because that's what he's always been known at UCLA. But
no, I think first year he was Liku, wasn't he? I think he was.
Maybe that's his legal name.
That was 9 years ago, though. So
yeah, so true.
Yeah. And Keanu Williams, both going to Penn State with Akaka Malloy. We've talked about defensive tackle. It is hard to find good defensive tackles. It is really, you know, unusual to find a real standout defensive tackle, like a guy who makes a huge, huge impact. What you would really hope for, and I think realistically, given like the situation right now where Coach Chesney has to fill an entire roster, if he could find three good stout hole pluggers, not necessarily guys that are going to get upfield and get you three sacks, four sacks on the season, but guys who can just not get blown off the line, I would consider that a big win. I think if they get Vakalai, that's huge. And then two other guys with playing experience, I would consider this a win, because it is a difficult thing to do, to go out there and get in a really elite defensive tackle. If you have that interior who can just hold up their guys, you know, it comes down to really the linebackers making plays in a lot of defenses. So that's what I'm hoping for. I'd like to see a few more guys that they're going after. I mean, maybe they're feeling good about Vakalai. He visited the first weekend. You know, there was a threat that he might go to Michigan with his position coach from Utah. We have first heard that he wasn't going to go. Then we kind of heard that he might go, or that there was a possibility of it, and now we haven't heard anything. So he visited over the weekend, and we have tried. People have asked on the board, have you heard anything on him? And we have not. Yeah. So, yeah, that is kind of position. It's not that you need – like when we get on a middle linebacker, I think they need to get an elite middle linebacker. Yeah. I don't think you need an elite defensive tackle. You need three guys who can play at this level.
Yep, agreed. All right, then let's move on to edge. They have already addressed a couple of needs. They brought in a couple of guys who I think at worst are rotational edges, in Aiden Gobera, who was at JMU with this staff. He was kind of in their edge rotation, I would say. Played considerably. He's a former Notre Dame four-star. He did have a pretty bad ACL tear in 2023, derailed his 2024 season at Notre Dame, then ended up at JMU. So really last year playing was his first time kind of really back on the field after the ACL tear. So you might project him potentially actually improving a little bit even after that year, because ACL year tears, everyone talks about them like they're a 9-month injury now. Guys do not like fully reclaim what they were for usually at least a couple years afterwards. Anyway, he's coming in at one of the edge spots. And then Ryan McCullough from Cal, he's coming in at the other one. We both watched McCullough. I kind of like him. You know, it's tough to project either one as necessarily like a number one edge who's going to get you 10 sacks in a season and that sort of thing. But at worst, as like in that rotation of four guys that you need on the edge positions, I think they're pretty solid. I what I'm thinking here, Tracy, and I think you agree, they still need that number one guy, the guy who's going to be counted on to, you know, beat a tackle pretty consistently and just cause just general havoc and disruption. I will say this right now, with just the additions of Gobera and McCullough, this edge rotation is far better already than it was last year. However, if you want to be an elite defense, you usually need to have some elite pocket disruption. Get that from this group, look, I don't see it at defensive tackle. I don't care where it comes from. I don't see it at defensive tackle. I don't see like elite blitzing from the linebacker positions. So what I want is an edge. That's the most traditional and easiest place. Well, not easiest. That's the most traditional place to get a pass rush. And so right now, they are still in the mix for Sahir West, who's the JMU edge, who was insanely disruptive against Troy, played well against Louisville earlier in the year. Projecting a lot with him, I'll be honest, because this was his freshman year. And he wasn't like, you know, he didn't have 12 sacks. I think he had 7 on the year, and 3 of them came against Troy. But looking at a lot of his traits, he could be that guy. And he officially visited UCLA the first weekend. Apparently, Texas A&M is also looking at him pretty hard. It'll be interesting to see what ends up happening there, but he's kind of the name right now in that edge group. I don't see any other edges that are, and this again could be stuff that we don't know, but any other edges that are significant factors for UCLA right now?
Yeah, a few things. I think what we've seen a bit in their approach to the transfer portal are guys who had promising year or two at the P4 level who are then injured and haven't played. I think that's given where UCLA is and they're trying to build out a roster. I think that's a good play. They're probably underpriced because they haven't done anything lately. A lot of teams just aren't going to take the effort to project a guy who hasn't, you know, done anything in 2 years, let's say. I'm talking about Ryan McCulloch. We both watched him. Yeah, from what I saw of him, I liked him. I mean, I had a guy who does this, who evaluates a friend of mine, and he said, you know, Femi Oladejo. Now, I'm a little skeptical of that, but I'll take it if he can be a starter. Not necessarily that number one edge pass rusher, but a starter. I'm pro Aiden Gabara, too, because he was, before he was injured, he was at Notre Dame. The injury set him back. He's used James Madison as a way to come back. Now he's a good year removed from the ACL. I think that's a solid guy who was projected to play at the P4 level with P4 size. So yep. Like those, but like you said, I don't see the guy. I do like the upside if UCLA retains who it has on the roster. Scott Taylor might have been the best young surprise of last season.
Yep.
Really showed some capability of coming in as a true freshman and actually making an impact. I mean, he's talked about as a linebacker, but he played mostly as an edge when he came in on passing downs. Juju Walls, I thought he showed flashes that he could be pretty good. I mean, these are young guys. Right.
And Cole Cogshell, who was the most heralded of the bunch coming in.
Right. Yeah. So I see good depth if you just project that they're going to get a little bit better in a year of development when they're young guys like this. Would really like to see, I mean, you know, Sahir West would be the guy. And like you said, I mean, there's no absolute guarantee that he is gonna, you know, get you 8 sacks, 10 sacks on the year. I'll tell you though, I think it would be a lot smarter for him to come to UCLA than Texas A&M. Texas A&M, he is probably a depth guy.
Yeah.
Gonna see a lot of competition. He is at UCLA, he's gonna come in with all the staff who knows him. He's already gained credibility with them. He'd probably be the number one edge. Wow, there might be a significant difference in NIL. I understand that, but sometimes you got to make the smarter decision beyond just NIL. We haven't heard that much. We barely heard that about Texas A&M after he visited last weekend. So that's kind of curious. We've heard like UCLA looks good for him. We're not sure. No, it is. So I don't know if people are making that up right now because there's no information on him, but that's where that stands. So, yeah, I mean, I'm cautiously optimistic. Still would really like, let's put it this way. If UCLA gets a good left tackle and it gets a Sahir West, I'm feeling really good. Just with those two developments, I'm feeling really good about this depth chart at this moment for this depth chart going into next year.
Yeah, absolutely. Then linebacker. I think UCLA absolutely needs a starter at Mike. And I would argue two starters here would be cool.
It needs a guy. Let's put it that way. It needs the number one big time inside linebacker who makes plays and gets 100 tackles on the season.
Yeah, for me, I mean, you wrote your transfer needs and I agree with them. For me, this is maybe the biggest need on the team to me right now is linebacker. Like Mone Malifu, I like him okay. I don't think he's that guy yet. Jalen Woods.
Had some moments.
Has some moments, but I'm iffy on him as a ideal starter at for a good UCLA team. Donovan Pilott, another guy who, yeah, he's had some moments. He's shown some things. He's another guy who's going to be 2 years removed from his ACL, so maybe he reclaims some things. But this is not a good depth chart right now for me. And I think this is one where there needs to be some, like, especially as we get deeper into the portal, these final 8 days, I think this for me should be a big priority, is nailing some big time, or at least some guys who've been very productive. Cause I'm linebacker. If you've, listened to me over, the years, I'm big on that one, not necessarily needing to be based on athleticism and measurables. I think a huge part of playing linebacker is being smart and knowing where a play is going and having those crazy instincts and just like being there before anyone else is there. Some of that is athleticism. You got to have some minimum foot speed, but a lot of it is, have you taken the reps to know, like, this is the way this, run design looks, and I know where to go. And for me, look at production. You look at guys who have done it a lot, and then you can project them up. Almost always you can project them up, because they've done it. And so for me, this comes down to go get some guys who have been starters at, whatever G5, FCS, I don't really care, but people who have played a lot of football. I think that's huge and key here.
Speaking of that, two guys, they might not be that big time middle linebacker who makes all the plays, but Drew Spinogatti, who played at James Madison, undersized a bit, but if you're talking about he could plug in and he knows their system, hit the ground running, leadership role, I think he would be key at this point given the depth chart. And then another guy, Cam Santee. We haven't seen him play much, but he did play for them at Holy Cross. Another guy with a lot of experience, I think, playing in this defense. I think those two guys for depth, potential starter there, could go a long way too of shoring up the depth. I think it goes when you put in a new scheme, if you had two linebackers who know the scheme, they plug in and they've done it. That's, and maybe not top end talent, but they've done it. There's a lot to be said for that in your first transition year.
Yeah. And so for Cam Santee, 110 tackles for Holy Cross. He was recruited to Holy Cross by Bob Chesney. It makes sense. Like that one, just it's, you got to look at like kind of what makes sense. And that one makes a lot of sense. Opportunity to come up to the P4 level. Like it would make sense if UCLA does get serious there and offers him that he would come. And then it's just like, okay, it's going up from FCS to P4. That's a big, big jump. And it's hard to project, but again, I just look 110 tackles for a competitive Holy Cross. Like, okay, sign me up.
I gotta look at some video right now, Dave.
Dude, look at some video. And then there's a couple other guys. Owen Long. We've heard Indiana's probably in the lead right now, but UCLA's still trying as a competitive offer out there.
I mean, they're involved and they are competing with Indiana right now.
Yeah, no, I mean, they're, I don't know. I think they're doing, they're not, what I'll say, they're not doing anything weird. When it was.
Yeah, yeah. Like in years past where you and I go, what are they doing?
No, they're attacking it. Like they're attacking all the needs. And like, I'm looking at it and saying, look, I think we're going to be able to walk out of this transfer portal period and say, hey, there's a few guys that we haven't seen that we have no idea what they're going to look like. But they're going to hit their needs. I think they're going to hit their positional needs. And then it's going to come down to what they look like in April when we can start complaining or saying, hey, they did a really good job. But I mean, if they land Cam Santee and they say he's going to be the starting Mike linebacker, who the hell am I to say that that's not the case? Because I've seen Cam Santee play exactly zero times. I've seen exactly zero snaps of football from him. No idea.
And you won't see much on YouTube.
No, because I just checked. It's Holy Cross.
I'm gonna have to watch a whole Holy Cross game here.
Yeah, find that. Yeah, tell me where you.
Yeah, can yeah. Find I'll find that.
Yeah. But anyway. So anyway, linebacker, definitely a big need for me. They need to land, I think, somebody who's going to be very productive there. Defensive back, let's divvy this up actually a little bit. Let's start with the safeties and nickels. So right now they have one or two commitments in the safety nickel areas. Tashawn James, Iowa State safety, we've got him projected to start now. And then DJ Barksdale, the nickel from JMU this past season, he committed. There was a whole weird thing with Scooter Jackson, which will whatever. I mean, these things happen in recruiting. But he is.
We published a story that said that he's coming back, and then I don't know, 8 seconds later,
he says
he's going to the transfer portal, and we're all what? Go back to our source.
So you guys know that.
No, he's coming back.
We're not going to tell you how the cookie is crumbled, but just so you know, that's not us being stupid. It wasn't. It's just these weird things happen in today's world of transfer portal recruiting. Anyway, he is officially coming back now. So right now the safety group is Scooter Jackson. We've got him slotted as the starting nickel. We've got Tashawn James as one of the safeties. We've got Cole Martin as the other one. DJ Barksdale then kind of filling in as a fourth safety guy. They're still recruiting a lot of safeties.
A lot of safeties.
So I'm interested to see what they're going for here. They might be going for like a, I don't know, if you followed Colin Hitchler's defense at JMU, they were big on box safeties. They were big on getting a guy down into the box, supporting the run. They wanted to take away a team's running game first and foremost. So they might be thinking, we need some bigger guys too. Because right now, Tashawn James is the only one over 200 pounds in this group. So that could be part of it.
But it's funny, though. The guys that were coming back, Cole Martin, Scooter Jackson, those two guys were really good.
Yeah.
Toward the line of scrimmage. I mean, you've got your guys.
I know.
I mean, I'm really really impressed with this, that they retained Scooter Jackson. Cole Martin, if you'd have asked me who's the number one guy who's going to leave this team, I'd say Cole Martin.
Yeah.
And his coming.
His dad is coaching at another FBS school now.
Yeah. Where he used to live.
Yeah. That he's already been to. Right now, what they're still looking at with safety, I'll just go through some of the names. We haven't heard much of anything new on Matt Irwin in a while, so I would say that one, I don't know, but I would say that one is maybe not happening. Lyric Rawls, we haven't heard anything since the start of this, so I would say that one is probably not. One who is still visiting is Nick Peltekian, 6'0", 215, Lehigh safety. He was first team all Pat League in 2024 and second team in 2025. Started a lot of games. Again, at the FCS level, but started a lot of games. Then there is Josiah Dye, the brother of the other Dye, who's the running back. He was at Southern Utah as well. He also signed with UTEP, transferred to Southern Utah with his brother. He's another guy they're looking at safety.
Carmelo. You got Carmelo-ize the situation. Mercer
safety. Yeah, he's going to Carmelo-ize things. He played both cornerback and safety for Mercer. 6'4", 200. So, again, kind of fit in the theory of a bigger guy. I think he's coming in tomorrow, I want to say, on his official visit. He's drawing a lot of interest. Auburn is on for him, too. So, this is, some guy at that level who's very, very well thought of. And then a recent guy who just visited, Northern Colorado safety Cam Chapa, who was all Big Sky in 2025, 88 tackles, 4 picks, was a freshman All-American in 2024, second team All-American at the FCS level this past season. So a stud at the FCS level, 6'1", 195. So they're still looking at a lot of safeties here, Tracy.
Yeah, if they get one among those guys, Peltekian, Carmelo-ize.
I would call it a day at that point.
Yeah, and Cam Chapa. I mean, one among those guys are all very much playable who could compete to start to me.
Yep.
And they've already got, I mean, Scooter Jackson played mostly nickel. At one point, Dave, I stopped paying attention.
I get it. I didn't
but DJ Barksdale, the JMU, he was their nickel. So Cole Martin was a starter. Tayshawn James, you would project as a starter. So, I mean, this is looking pretty good.
I feel really good about safety. I feel really good about that entire depth chart.
Yeah, maybe not enough depth, maybe one more guy.
Yeah.
But the top end looks pretty good.
Cornerback. So the big news obviously was getting Roderick Pleasant back. He was easily UCLA's best corner last year and arguably their best defensive player overall. Shutdown corner, and kind of unexpectedly because he hadn't really broken through at Oregon. So he was one of those guys where like, he's got a lot of athletic traits. He was great out of high school, but he's the one who hit, you know, they went for a lot of those types of guys last year. A couple of them were okay. Roderick Pleasant really hit. As somebody who had been highly ranked out of high school, hadn't really come together yet. Now he did. They also, so in the portal so far, they've brought in Dante Lovett, who is a Virginia Tech corner, hadn't really been a starter for the Hokies. And then redshirted this past season after four games, both because his role was, it may have reduced a little bit. It's hard to completely tell, but it certainly hadn't increased a ton. And also his coach was fired. So after four games, he decided to redshirt and preserve the year of eligibility. He did play as a true freshman for Virginia Tech and then as a true sophomore, had been a rotational guy. But right now, given the state of this depth chart, we haven't projected to start. And that's one where I didn't watch a lot of Virginia Tech football. I have seen him a little bit, though, much more than I've seen of Holy Cross. I can't say for certain. But that's one where I would say you probably still want to get another starter level corner for me. And that's
now, there's Robert Andre Jordan.
Robert Stafford has started some games. Andre Jordan went in the portal. He may still come back, but this is one where I still probably want to get either Andre Jordan back or another starter level corner.
Yeah. And they're going after guys. So this all, it's so funny how one person can change this all. Roderick Pleasant was their best corner before he was hurt. Announcing his return changes everything. Now they're kind of playing with a bit of house money. They get Andre Jordan back. Damn. But so they get Dante Lovett, who I think might be able to step up. I mean, he's only going to be a redshirt junior. I think he might be able to step up as a starter level. But if they retain all the guys, I mean, Robert Stafford at one point started last year. Aaron Williams was a project guy, but I think if I remember, Dave, when he got in, we both said, hey, he looks pretty good.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the depth might be there too, but they're probably one more starter away. And there are some guys that they're still looking at.
Washington cornerback Leroy Bryant. Yeah, he started 5 games for Washington this year.
Who we heard had a good visit.
Yeah. There's Cal cornerback Cam Sidney. He played in 35 games for the Bears the past 3 seasons, was very productive this past season. 47 tackles, 5 for loss, a pick, a pass breakup, forced fumble, fumble recovery. Also was, Vic Sooto, the new linebackers coach. He was the co-defensive coordinator there. So that's another one. There's Duke cornerback Kyron Condal. He's more of a depth guy. Hasn't really played a whole lot his first 2 seasons, but there's another guy. Roman Pearson from Ball State. He was a starter for Ball State this past year in 2025. Didn't allow a touchdown, 25 tackles, 5 pass breakups, interception. He's got 1 season left. He might make sense as a plug-in starter.
Visiting, I think right now has an offer. Also supposed to be visiting Kansas, has another offer also from East Carolina. So has some P4 interest offers. Yep.
There's Jace McMillan, Montana State quarterback. This is one where I don't know, because this is one where it looks like FCS size to me. 5'9", 157 is what we have him listed at.
157.
That's what we have listed here. I don't know. Maybe we wrote that wrong, but that's what we have listed.
That's right.
Small guy. And I don't know that that's necessarily a fit against P4 receivers. But he's another guy on the list. So anyway, I think
157 he was listed last year.
Boy, howdy. But there's a couple of guys in there that I think could fill that need as a starter corner. Maybe they land one today.
I'm kind of feeling good about it. And again, okay. 6 days in,
honestly, I feel okay. Like if there's an area that they miss and they don't get another starter level corner, you know, if you want to talk me into Robert Stafford stepping up or in, Kieran Jabari, Chase Coleman, Aaron Williams, fine. Okay, whatever. I don't think this is like five alarm fire if they don't get another starting corner. I just think it's a, this would be good to have.
Yeah.
Not a must have, but good to have.
Just to remind too, this is a big endeavor. I mean, we're 6 days in. The portal still remains open for, you know, another, what?
Another 8 days.
On
the 16th,
another eight days. And then recruiting continues on after that. That's when the portal window's open. That just means when you can go into the portal. There's plenty to be done. I would bet we will still add dozens of guys to this list on that transfer tracker story. So this is just still kind of the beginning. I'd say we're let's say we're in the first act. Let's do that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a fair assessment. Specialists, the news there was that we've heard Mateen Begani and Salim Abdul Wahab are in fact returning.
Which is really big. I mean, Mateen Begani took an official visit to ASU, and ASU people were pretty convinced he was coming.
Yeah, so that's huge. And Salim Abdul Wahab was a good snapper. I mean, they've got like eight on the roster, but getting him back also huge. So that's the state of transfer recruiting. We're already an hour into this thing. Hour and 11 minutes into this, Tracy. That's just the state of play right now. We got to talk some basketball. Got to talk some round ball. So the men's team finished up a disastrous road trip at Iowa, at Wisconsin. Lost both games. Looked bad to start the games. Looked semi-competitive in the first half of the second half. And then we're not able to do anything close to complete the comeback. Didn't even really come close to competing. In the Wisconsin game, came a little bit closer in Iowa, but still ended up losing that one by 11. I was pretty appalled with their poor effort, intensity, and focus at the beginning of each game. I didn't think they were ready to play. I didn't think they were in any way geared up for those games or what the environment was going to entail. And we're in January now. They needed to learn those habits in a lot of these other games. They did play some tougher opponents earlier on in the season. They needed to learn some better habits. But I was really disappointing performances. And it's this is kind of turning into what has been a pretty darn disappointing season overall. And it needed to not be that. And that's probably the biggest concern right now, is that this was supposed to be a top 20 team. And I think we were both a little skeptical of the like very rosy, like this is a top 10 team that some punditry was saying, but like, I don't think in my wildest dreams, I mean, I guess I'm a pessimistic type. So there was this possibility in my head, but it was like the dark bottom 10% possibility, not the like midline possibility.
Yeah. We could do a whole podcast about the men's basketball team, and the reason why we spent an hour talking about football is, we'll just be straight, it's a lot more fun to talk about football right at this moment than the basketball.
It's so not fun to talk about this basketball. And so we had some people asking us
why aren't you
why aren't you writing things about basketball? Yeah. And I'm like, a big part of it is that football, I mean, we've got a coaching search that actually was a coaching search for the first time in 7 years. So that's huge. And then it's also, transfer portal craziness, like December through January is now the crazy football season. So there's that. And it's also really, really unfun to write about this basketball team right now.
And it's unfun to watch.
I'll just tell people this. I lived in Georgia for 2016 through 2020-ish. During that period was the dregs of the Steve Alford era, right? Everyone remembers that. I was staying up until 10:30 for a tip-off to watch the game and then write about it on East Coast time. And writing about those Jalen Hands, Chris Wilkes teams was some of the most miserable time I've ever had covering this stuff, because it was just so none of this matters first because they're not going to go anywhere. This team sucks. And then on top of that, they are such a just a joyless team to watch. And I won't say this is quite at that level, but it is reminding me of that. Like, writing about this team is not fun. There isn't a part of it where it's like, oh, well, there's some upside here, there's some upside there. Basically, what it is, okay, Donovan Dent needs to play a lot better, but there are so many mismatched parts on this team where, and this was all knowable. I mean, talking about it in March that they probably needed to get an athletic wing. And then they didn't, and that they, you know, resigned Eric Daly and Tyler Bilodeau, and look, whatever, bygones, bygones. But the thing is, when you then are then saying, oh, wow, they really can't defend anyone very well, and these guys aren't good defenders, it's like, yeah, true. That was knowable. This was all known. These were known facts. And, you know, Adai Mara, he's really, really good. They should be playing him a lot starting in December of last year, and they didn't play him a lot. They benched him for an entire game against Iowa. He up and leaves. Could it have been done better? Could Adai Mara have, you know, been more up front? Sure, whatever. But like, if you want to say the genesis of that problem was not recognizing that Adai Mara was, I don't know, maybe the most invaluable player on the team last year, I think that's a fair assessment too. And so, yeah, and now center's a problem. Well, okay, that's also knowable. This was going to be a problem. I would think the thing that like everyone was expecting that hasn't turned out to be the case is that Donovan Dent was expected to play like an All-American all year, and he hasn't. He's played better of late, I would say. He's starting to find his groove, I think, a little bit. But also, like, if we want to, you know, really dive into this thing, you're Mick Cronin. You run a controlled offense. You run an offense where you are calling set plays. You run an offense where you want to slow it down. You're running an offense where the number one thing, the absolute ethos of your offensive style, the thing that makes them highly efficient, is that you don't turn the ball over and you go and get an up-tempo point guard. Now, look, all eyes open. We all thought this was going to work at some level. We all thought he was going to come in and he was going to perform really, really well. And he's performed well-ish of late. Hasn't performed at the level anyone expected. But also, this is why in my season review last year, I talked about archetype fit. What is the archetype fit at these different positions for Mick Cronin? And I would say at point guard, he doesn't have an archetype fit. At shooting guard, he does. Sky Clark. There's a reason why Sky Clark has looked like the best player on the team by far, because he's a fit, like total fit for what UCLA wants, what Mick Cronin needs out of a shooting guard. But then you have Eric Daly at the three, not a fit, not in any way a fit for what Mick Cronin needs at the three. Tyler Bilodeau at the four, not a fit. I mean, I recognize that he's performed pretty well this year. Not a fit. He's not an athlete. You need to have an athlete at both the three and the four. And then at the five, obviously, it's just a gaping hole. It's not that there isn't a fit. It's that there isn't really a person. But this could have been self-assessed. This could have been figured out, and it wasn't. Anyway, yeah. That's my rant.
You pretty much just covered it there, Dave.
I'm getting back to covering the team, Tracy, because gotcha. I stopped covering the team for some time.
I understand. First on this team. You know, I wrote that story going into that road trip saying, yeah, you know, we got some worries. Some people agreed. Other people said, you're, you know, overreacting. Well, we saw what those last two games were. And the most disturbing thing to me about those two games. So they hadn't played, I don't know, for like 10 days. They go to Iowa. They're asleep in the first half. Then they come alive in the second. So you could say, okay, I think there was a flu explanation, but they also were rusty. They hadn't played. So you would think they go to Wisconsin, and at even if they lose, they would have maybe sustained or been more consistent in their effort, but they did the same thing. Mm-hmm. Slept through the first half. There's something wrong there that's happening. Whether I think Mick Cronin is responsible for a lot of it. You have to prepare your players. And he's responsible for, like you said, this roster makeup. I don't think these guys are the type as a team that can be mentally focused and prepared for every game. I mean, we're halfway through the season and this is where we are. The schedule coming up is fraught with just dark holes. The second thing that's, I mean, it's really indicative of how, like what you were saying, the personnel was not evaluated well and this team was not put together well. You've benched your starting center on a road trip, on a really vital road trip. If you had had a really good center against Iowa, could have been the difference maker. And actually could have been the difference maker against Wisconsin. But he was benched against Wisconsin because of his recent play. That there's halfway through the season for that to be happening. These are all not good indications. And like you said, the personnel choices we could have anticipated. That's very, very, I mean, you have to think that's very worrisome about the program. People are asking on the forum, what do y'all think? What's Mick Cronin's status? I'm not personally very positive or optimistic about this season, given where it is. There is a chance it turns around. But I'm not optimistic how it ends. You know, Dave, when we see seasons going kind of south, it's hard to really anticipate the feeling around the program at the time. We've been in, just really regrettably, Dave, you and I have been in this situation many times between football and basketball, trying to anticipate what the zeitgeist will be when the season's over. A lot of times we've been, when we've said, oh, it's going to completely crash and it's going to be a disaster, we've been right, which is very, very sad. It's really difficult to see where this is going to go. And why it's imperative is you would have to think Mick Cronin's next season is, I mean, vitally important. He's going to lose a lot of this roster to graduation. I don't believe the fifth year eligibility thing will come in time. So he's going to have to recruit the transfer portal. There's going to have to be a dramatic difference in their approach to evaluating and recruiting. Like you said, you went player by player. This, and when we say a guy who can fit Mick Cronin, it's not just the boot camp kind of mentality.
No, I'm talking about archetypal fit for what his play style is.
Right.
Because you need athletes at the three and the four.
Right. And it's in what it is first. It's that, but it's also, and this is really, really a real indication of whether he will fit with Mick Cronin. Is he a good defender? Is he a good defender? It's not hard to see. Sky Clark, good defender, fits. Who else is a good defender on the team? Not good fits. You can look back through his transfers and who he brought in. Johnson last year ended up being a good fit because he was a good defender. A good defender usually is a guy who first is going to play hard. Has focus, is learned to play the game on both sides of the court, so he has the right attitude. And he's going to be playable for Mick Cronin because he can defend. And most of the time, if you're a good defender, you understand fundamentals. All those things fit what Mick Cronin wants in a player. So many guys don't. So when they go into that portal, it better be just not about finding good defenders, but finding the guys that fit what Mick Cronin, his archetypes of what he wants from those positions. They've gotten away from it in so many ways. They need to find those guys. And we were going to be very, very forthright and honest about whether we think those guys, whoever they go after in the portal, are those guys. I think the program probably realizes, you know, this is really a critical time, and that portal recruiting will be critical too. So, yeah, it's
when people have questions about job status. And so I'll just say this. I mean, I think you can think whatever you want. I think the reality is this: Mick Cronin has an extension. It has upped his buyout considerably. There's runway here for him to try another rebuild. And I think that's what is going to need to happen, is they need to attack the transfer portal and try to get these things that we're talking about. They need to find archetypal fits. And what that means is a shot blocking center who will rebound, interchangeable, 6'6", 6'7" types with athleticism who have some size at the 3 and 4, who can defend, who are going to be tough asses, the whole thing. And then you need a point guard who's going to be responsible with the ball. You need those things. And if you have those things, you can have a good Mick Cronin team. But those are the things you need. And then if they nail all that, they need to think about what kind of program fits Mick Cronin. And the reality for me has long been, it cannot be built exclusively through the transfer portal. He's not ideal for a transfer portal culture, because you need time to adjust to his systems, to him as a coach. There's lots of stuff. We kind of lost the thread a little bit, but Donovan Dent kind of playing through that Mick Cronin adjustment. Johnny Juzang had the same adjustment. Like, lots of guys take a while to adjust to him, and not even to him, to the demands. Some coaches are demanding, some coaches aren't demanding. Mick Cronin is a very demanding coach. And so ideally you want multiple years with Cronin. So whether it's a transfer portal strategy where you are targeting and acquiring guys who've only spent a year in school or 2 years in school, okay. Or, and this is, again, I'm just going to keep banging my own drum, you've got a coach who's been, for whatever reason, very good at retention. Very, very good at it. Basically, the only guy who's left who hasn't been pushed out is Adai Mara. And you could make an argument that that was implicitly done with the playing time. But that's the only guy. Everyone else has been more or less pushed out. If he embraced high school recruiting at the 4-star level, and again, I'm not talking about going and getting a whole crap load of 5 stars, but if you embrace it at the 4-star level, I do think there's still an avenue for a school that, again, has shown that it's very good at retention, for a coach who's shown he's very good at retention, to potentially build a program, not entirely, but significantly more than has been through high school recruiting. And if you do that, plus add a couple of transfers every year, and you keep in mind always your archetype fits, who fits you, not what's a shiny object, who shoots it really well, all this crap that doesn't matter, because Mick Cronin offenses do not need that. You need to offensive rebound, and you need to prevent turnovers. You do those two things, you're going to have a highly efficient offense that's good enough to make a long run, because you're a very good defensive coach. But you need to have the pieces that fit those two things. If you don't have the pieces that fit those two things, you end up with just pure mediocrity, which is where they are right now.
I can say this too. People are, questioning or thinking about considering, does Mick Cronin have the capability of changing and salvaging this? And we know him, and everyone knows him, to be a very, very competitive guy. He can't stop being competitive. It's just who he is. We've seen him pivot in many ways since he's been at UCLA, and sometimes the pivots weren't successful, but he's open to changing and self-scouting to a degree. Now, all coaches aren't good at that, really, but he has shown the ability to do that. I think if this season doesn't go well, he has a chance to be able to turn this around, but it's going to change. It's going to demand a change in their approach to talent acquisition. And it's going to start, while you said it is high school, admittedly, but right now, Dave, it's going to be about that transfer portal. And maybe they find younger guys, I get it, but no matter, they won't be able to just base this on high school to fill out a roster next year. They're going to need
I'm saying, like, if you do nail it, then you do need to, you gotta really, this is like, it's, I think there's some soul searching for the program and understanding, understanding your strengths, not even just like, oh God, they're weak in this area and all that stuff. But like Mick Cronin has a lot of strengths as a coach. Those don't just go away because they've had a couple of rough seasons. Like a lot of strengths, good developmental head coach, really good. Really good defensive head coach, does a great job of developing guys on the mental side of the game. Turnover prevention. Like if you follow guys who spend time with Cronin, turnover prevention, turnovers go down all the time for basically everybody. Because he teaches them like the necessary facts of, you know, this is essential to winning games. He has all that. He's also been very good at retention. And I that almost gets poo-pooed when I bring it up with people. And I'm just like, I don't understand why people poo-poo that. Like he,
you just like saying,
I like saying poo-poo. Yeah. But retention, like it's a strength. Now, whether that's UCLA and its natural advantages or whether it's something about Mick Cronin being a teddy bear when you get to know him, I don't know. And I don't care. The reality is what the reality is. And that is guys stick around for the most part. So you've got those two factors. He's a developmental head coach and guys stick around. What else do you have, Tracy? You've got that 4 stars in high school are a hell of a lot cheaper than any transfer, pretty much. You've got that. You've got that retaining guys is cheaper than acquiring them. So you've got that too. So
I feel like I am
bashing my head through a wall talking about this, but like there is an avenue to not just zig when everyone else is zigging here. You can zag, and that zagging can involve embracing high school, embracing the 4-star recruiting, but it does require, like, it requires, you know, the kind of verities of high school recruiting. Transfer recruiting is a different deal. It basically does come down to who's offering the most money. High school recruiting, when you're first dealing with these kids, they're 15 or 16 years old. Their parents are still highly, highly, highly involved. There's some relationship building that needs to happen. The old verities of recruiting would still need to happen, along with some monetary piece.
I'd say it is, though.
It's this more. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. I'm just saying it's a little bit of a different beast. Like there is like some element of this, and so I think there's an avenue here, but you gotta be willing to zig. I think right now they've just tried to be another one of the transfer portal programs. And Mick Cronin's style doesn't really fit that.
I think it's just find, like what we said a number of times, is he needs to find, it's like Ben Howland, find the guys the type of player that you've coached before that you've been successful with. Find those guys. Just find those guys. You know what, Dave, though? I want to talk about the team just at least for a few minutes that's really good and fun to watch.
The UCLA women's basketball team.
When's the last time a UCLA team blew out a USC team in football or basketball or, I don't know, any others to that extent?
We're talking about
that was 34 points, and it was just, after that first quarter, it was destruction, and it was really fun to watch. Just, I mean, you know, there are times when you want really competitive games because they're fun. But sometimes you just want to see a blowout and see that UCLA is this dominant, dominant team. And you especially love to see that against USC. That was one of the most satisfying, fulfilling games I've watched in many years. And I'm just from that. Thank you to the women's basketball program, Corey Close, for just giving me that.
Yeah.
Coming up, they've got 5 or 6 ranked teams in the Big Ten. They're all going to play. That might be selling it. I mean, they're ranked, but we saw them just play a ranked team, a couple of teams, and they blow them out. So Nebraska is on Sunday,
and then Minnesota on Wednesday.
Yeah. I think the toughest team coming up will probably be Maryland, who's ranked 8th. But man, if UCLA just plays to form, they should win the Big Ten like they did last year. They already have, how many quad wins do they have? They have like 12. I don't know, something ridiculous. And they're going to have a ton more. They should absolutely, I mean, get a number one seed in the tournament. And they're now playing for the number one overall seed. And I mean, this is exciting. And if you watch that's just a lot of stats. If you watch the team, they're really fun. Corey Close went out and found the personnel to make them so much better this year and so much easier to watch this year than last year. So if you haven't watched them, please go out and watch them and tune in, because it is a pretty satisfying endeavor as a UCLA fan to watch them play.
Yes. Yes. They are extremely satisfying to watch. And this, you know, next year with women's basketball, it's probably going to take a big step back. Basically everyone graduates. They're going to have to rebuild the entire team. So really appreciate this. They've got 14 regular season games left. There'll be a number of Big Ten tournament games, and there'll be an NCAA tournament run, but it's, you know, we're talking 20 plus games left of watching this team together. It's a special team, been kind of a special run they've been on, and should be a very fun close to this season. So tune in. Good time.
Good times.
All right. Well, this has been a long boy.
This is like our longest we've ever done.
Yeah.
Wow. Sorry about that. We did have a lot to talk about.
Well, and I think I got too angry about men's basketball.
but you know, it means you care, Dave.
I needed to give people some of that, because I'm coming back to the beat from a long layoff, you know, Tracy, as somebody who doesn't cover the team.
Yeah.
So it's good to be back on the beat. For Tracy Pearson, I'm David Woods, Bruin Report Online, and we will talk to you again next time.
See y'all.